but a science that enables us to commune with the divine mind now, to be divinely inspired now, to reach the range of fetterless mind now. It is now, not in the future, that the science Mrs. Eddy discovered and revealed rises triumphantly above the fogs of sense and storms of passions. Unquote. Materialism, the great red dragon of old theology, would forever keep us working for a future salvation. The dragon's appearance, prophesied by Jesus in the book of Revelation, was actually brought to view by what Science and Health, the little book, revealed. Why? Because it was the truth in this little book, Science and Health, that for the first time in human history unmasked old theology. This dragon of Revelation, for what it really was and is. Old theology, the dragon, demands a labored salvation, while science, on the other hand, shows us our present perfection. Divine science, therefore, brings up the dragon so it can be uncovered and its nothingness exposed, seen, and understood. Bible readers know that the great red dragon and his emissaries, symbols for lust and hypocrisy, appeared in heaven, thus pretending to have a virtuous motive. The dragon cast out of his mouth water, for example, his weapon was water, suggesting the need for purification, instead of accepting man's inherent purity, the standpoint of science. Science sees man as the image and likeness of the one perfect mind. With the advent of Jesus, the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. But with the advent of Mary Baker Eddy, the Word is made spirit and dwells among us as divine inspiration, melting erudite systems of philosophy and religion. It is able to do this because love unveiled the healing promise and potency of a present spiritual afflatus. It is the gospel of healing on its divinely appointed human mission. Therefore, those who look for Mary Baker Eddy elsewhere than in her writings, which include the estoppel clauses in the manual, lose her instead of find her. Mrs. Eddy's concern regarding copyright. It has already been noted Mrs. Eddy made changes of great consequence to Science and Health after 1906, but she did not apply for a copyright on the 1910 edition because she saw the textbook had reached its culmination of scientific statement, and that it now belonged to the world. The 1910 edition, in actuality, has therefore always been in the public domain as she left it. The last numbering of the editions also took place in 1906. Then in June 1907, Mrs. Eddy read the textbook, quote, throughout consecutively in order to elucidate her idealism, unquote. As a consequence, the fourth edition in 1907 brought the vital change to her definition of God. This definition of God, given by Mary Baker Eddy, is unquestionably the most important information ever to descend upon mankind. For the first time, God, infinite good, was scientifically explained. And it was this, along with other changes, many of them vital, that was never copyrighted. Mrs. Eddy listened to God regarding what she should do about copyright. In 1890, there was a chance to gain financially by waiting a short time until a new international bill on copyright was expected to pass. At first glance, Mrs. Eddy had admitted that maybe waiting would be the course to follow. But on December 18th, 1890, she wrote Mr. Nixon, quote, now I have received different instructions from the source beyond human views. It was selfish of me to have entered into a human sense of gain. Push the book to as fast as possible completion. Some worldly poor Christian in England and elsewhere can publish it for the good of our race or translate it with more facilities than we can in the old countries. Let them do it. It is God's book, and he says, give it at once to the people, unquote. Again, in a letter dated January 1, 1891, she wrote Mr. Nixon, quote, "There is a great sin being committed by delaying or suffering my book Science and Health to be delayed for a money consideration due to an investigation of copyright advantages. If this course is pursued, this unprecedented prosperity of this book, that I have always conducted on the opposite basis, will go down in the hands of those who do this. This I know. God's law to feed my sheep, to give science and health at once to those hungering for it, must be obeyed and held paramount to an international law on copyright. Heed this, and rush with all your ability this work that the enemy is holding back." Mrs. Eddy desired widest possible dissemination. Mrs. Eddy directed her writings to the world, not to a particular sect or denomination. She yearned for her discovery to reach all mankind. During her last years with us, her highest communications were all addressed to the world through its own channels, its own newspapers, magazines, and other mediums. Of this tendency to withhold from church and give to the world, Mrs. Orgain comments, "The marvel of vision and consistency in Mrs. Eddy's revelation and founding is awe-inspiring in the retrospective. She never permitted revelation, womanhood, to be separated from her founding, manhood, and thus they persisted to the last step in institutional founding." Unquote. The imprisonment of Mary Baker Eddy's writings. Mrs. Eddy spoke to the world, and the world heard her. There is no doubt that she purposely did not copyright vital changes in her last 14 editions, in which the culmination of her discovery as a science was reached. "A science," she said, "does not need to be copyrighted." In 1910, she knew her textbook no longer needed copyrighting. In 1906, the textbook had not reached its culmination. This did not deter the board of directors, alias the trustees under the will of Mary Baker Eddy, from having their witnesses testify under oath. The final edition of the Christian Science textbook was published in 1906. Unquote. In the 14 editions published after 1906, Mrs. Eddy made many changes, some of them being the most vital she had ever made, such as the change she made in her definition of God, which tied the entire textbook together as a science, without seam or rent. In spite of her clearly expressed desire that science and health be given the widest possible distribution, the board has pursued the opposite policy. Immediately upon gaining perpetual copyright ownership, the board withdrew Science and Health from all commercial bookstores throughout the world. It has since been for sale only in the fast-closing Christian Science reading rooms. Report has it that since the withdrawing of the textbook from bookstores, nearly 800 reading rooms have closed, compounding the difficulty in obtaining a copy of this sacred volume. The imprisoning of Science and Health is in direct violation of our leader's fondest hope, expressed in the words, quote, "I want my students to take every means possible to make science and health available to the whole world." Unquote. She knew and stated, "Science and health, not Christian Science churches, will be the redeemer." If she were here today, she would agree with the United Christian Scientists' clear-sighted attorneys that, quote, "Congress was no more free in 1971 to grant a new copyright on science and health than it is free today to grant a copyright to the Archbishop of Canterbury on the King James Version of the Bible." Unquote. Separating her from her writings. Since the passage of the Special Act of Congress, another colossal and cruel injustice has been done Mrs. Eddy in the attempt to separate her from her revelation. As will be noted from the following information, the compounded disobedience to Mrs. Eddy's leadership has today produced a textbook whose title page declares, quote, "Published by the First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston, Massachusetts. and on the reverse side, the list of copyrights concludes with 1971, the Christian Science Board of Directors, copyright under Special Act of Congress, unquote. Then, at the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., under the registrations of all translations done in foreign languages of Mrs. Eddy's works, it states, quote, author / owner, Christian Science Board of Directors, unquote. It does not name Mary Baker Eddy as the author. It names the Board of Directors as the author. This is proof positive of the Board's continued attempts to separate the Revelator from her revelation, to disclaim Mary Baker Eddy by the very entity, Science and Health, that God called her to bring forth in order to disseminate and perpetuate her revelation. Removal of her picture. What Mrs. Eddy discovered is so revolutionary it tends to offend the conventional human mind, causing even some of her students to cry, personality, whenever her name is mentioned or her achievements lauded. Those who fail to see Mrs. Eddy's human history in its proper light as a God-impelled, holy history, just as was the human history of Jesus, often decry any mention of her name as being personality worship. In the past, this cry of personality has been used to cover far-reaching crimes against Mrs. Eddy and all humanity, and has been one of the actions responsible for bringing the great Christian Science movement to its knees. Here's a note. This hidden method of committing crime will ere long be unearthed and punished as it deserves. The effort of disloyal students to blacken me and to keep my works from public recognition has been made too many times for me to fear it. But I ask the help of others in the uncovering of this injustice. A lie left to itself is not so soon destroyed as it is with the help of truth-telling. A conspicuous example of this was the removal of Mrs. Eddy's picture as the frontispiece of the Christian Science textbook immediately after her passing, ostensibly on the ground that too much attention was being paid to her personality. Why did Mrs. Eddy place her picture and signature in the textbook? Why did she, from September 7, 1907, until the time of her passing in 1910, continuously advertise in the Christian Science periodicals that the new editions contained her picture and signature? The frontispiece picture is an exercise in our being able to look at person and to see not person but God. This is the hallmark of a Christian Scientist. The spiritual idea must have its visible expression, its incarnation, or else Christian Science is only abstraction. The frontispiece is an exercise in seeing correctly. If, when looking at it, we see only a person, we haven't advanced very far in Christian Science. If, however, we can look through person and see God's radiant expression, we have seen the purpose of the picture. It is really an exercise in how to look at everyone and everything and translate it back into mind, into reality. When you resolve the personal I, you see the real Mary Baker Eddy. You see the mind of God in expression, that which was able to bring humanity the second coming of the Christ. Quote, a metaphysician learns not to read from matter and to look through person rather than at it. When Jesus said, "He that hath seen me hath seen the Father," he could hardly have meant that his corporeal person depicted God, but rather that reality was seen in the spirituality, the power, and the love that shone through his life and character. In viewing the human, we have to be able to see not material person, but God, meaning that where personal sense sees only another person, spiritual sense discerns God in expression. Thus our reaction to the portrait is a test of soul sense. Mrs. Eddy was always insistent that unless the students could understand her in her true light, as transparency for the source, they would not truly understand Christian Science. Unquote. By John Morgan. When her picture first appeared in the early editions of the textbook, she obviously knew that she had not yet completed the science and system that was to be woven into the text of Science and Health, and therefore she temporarily removed it. It did not reappear permanently until after she read the book throughout consecutively, in order to elucidate her idealism. Unquote. Then in the fourth edition of the 1907 Science and Health, her picture reappeared permanently, concurrently with her new definition of God, which for the first time had 7 instead of 8 synonyms. The 8th synonym, being, was dropped from question and answer number 1 and inserted in question and answer number 3. She is thereby showing us what being is, namely, being is what we are when we realize ourselves to be mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, which is the standpoint of the first edition. This was a change of stupendous importance to, quote, the system she denominated Christian Science, unquote. Archive Letters. People visiting the archives of the First Church of Christ Scientist, Boston, are shown evidence that purports to make Mrs. Eddy responsible for inclusion of the words "and branch churches," Manual, page 120. They are also shown letters dated October 26, 1910, per Fry, and November 11, 1910, per Dickey, purporting to show it was Mrs. Eddy herself who authorized the removal of her picture and signature. Inquirers and researchers are also shown the 1910 December journal, which advertised Science and Health without mention of her picture and signature. However, it must be remembered that the board and their representatives kept a close watch on Mrs. Eddy's condition. Many in high positions felt the end was near. This we know because she had to repeatedly urge them to support her metaphysically, and not continually, quote, "see me sprawled on the brink," unquote. That's an item from the Carpenter Foundation. Additionally, the board knew Mrs. Eddy did not always read the periodicals, and that such an omission might not be noticed by her, even if she did read them. In any case, the omission could be quickly remedied if she called it to their attention. It is well known that the board was being advised by their attorneys concerning how to circumvent the estoppel clauses in the manual. These attorneys surely knew the importance of Mrs. Eddy's picture and signature in Science and Health, and the advisability of making it appear that Mrs. Eddy herself had ordered the deletion. The removal of Mrs. Eddy's picture and signature at the time of her passing has, for more than 7 decades, called forth so much questioning, doubt, and protest on the part of the Christian Science field that Mother Church archivists are happy to show visitors this 1910 December journal and these letters ostensibly dictated by Mrs. Eddy. Only in God's right time will the whole truth come to light. As Mrs. Eddy frequently told her household, quote, "time tells all stories true," unquote. While the Boston hierarchy is prepared to produce their evidence that Mrs. Eddy herself ordered the removal of her picture and signature, the following facts are submitted to support the opposite contention that Mrs. Eddy knew what she was doing when she placed her picture and signature in Science and Health. She knew that it was an act of incalculable importance. She was acting with intelligence and foresight. She knew what she was doing when for over 3 years she advertised Science and Health in the Christian Science periodicals as containing, quote, "photogravure portrait of Mrs. Eddy together with a facsimile of her signature," unquote. These advertisements disappeared from the Journal and Sentinel only a few days before Mrs. Eddy's demise. She could no longer control the board's actions. It has been reported that attorneys advising the five-member board in 1910 counseled patients. Quote, "Wait until the old lady dies," they said. "She can't rule from the grave," unquote. That's from the Carpenter Foundation and Alice Horgain Library. A photocopy of this advertisement, as it appeared on page 258 of the Christian Science Sentinel of November 26, 1910, 1 week before her passing, is shown below. November 26, 1910. Christian Science Sentinel, Volume 13, Number 13. Special Announcements. From the publisher of Mrs. Eddy's works. The Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. This work contains important changes and additions by the author. Also, a photogravure portrait of Mrs. Eddy, together with a facsimile of her signature. This advertisement had appeared in all previous sentinels and journals since September 1907. This sentinel announcement, taken from Volume 13, Number 13, dated November 26, 1910, shows that the advertisement was still running a week before Mrs. Eddy's passing on December 3, 1910. Quote, "May not Mrs. Eddy have wanted these sentinel and journal advertisements to stand as evidence in case her picture and signature were removed at her passing, so future ages would be aware that she had placed them as a frontispiece in the textbook to evince her desire that science and health be given to all mankind with its purity protected by her easily recognizable cross and crown trademark, picture, and signature, but not imprisoned via copyright laws, legal or illegal," unquote. She knew what she was doing when she took the above-mentioned precaution of advertising for more than 3 years in the periodicals, because she had been alerted to the danger by the desperate efforts the board was making to have her remove the estoppel clauses and delegate her authority to them. She knew how they were consulting the most astute lawyers regarding these manual estoppels. Mrs. Eddy was extremely alert and capable to the end of her earthly sojourn. However, this did not prevent efforts being made, after her passing, to portray her as non compos mentis. It seems reasonable to think that if the estoppels in the manual are to be disobeyed, the attempt must be made to demote the scribe who penned them. She knew what she was doing when she made an in-depth study of copyright procedure, and this study, aided by input from her attorneys, made her well aware of the monumental significance of placing her picture and signature in the textbook along with the cross and crown insignia or trademark on the cover. Her directives totally abolished any and all centralized control and set every Christian Scientist free to discover in her writings man's divinity, without supervision or direction from a Boston hierarchy, which proclaims itself, quote, "the highest ecclesiastical court in the land," unquote. Returning now to the two above-mentioned letters on file in the archives signed Per Fry and Per Dickey, during the next friend suit, when the masters from the court interviewed Mrs. Eddy, they asked her if she herself always signed letters written by her. She answered, "Yes, if I know about them." This implied she was not always informed of letters written on her stationery purporting to have been dictated by her. Those who have made a careful research of what Mrs. Eddy left legally in force at the time of her passing have seen, to their utter amazement, how lie has been piled upon lie and deception heaped upon deception in an effort to circumvent Mrs. Eddy's directives and the manual requirements for the termination of the temporary five-member board of directors and of any vestige of a controlling mother church. It is therefore not difficult for an honest, meticulous investigator to see how easily letters purporting to show it was Mrs. Eddy herself who ordered the removal of her picture and signature could be procured and find their way into the archives. While still living at her Pleasant View home in Concord, New Hampshire, where she had lived for 15 years, Mrs. Eddy one day said to Henrietta Chanfrau, quote, "Henrietta, if I ever go away from here to another house, it will be to be delivered up to my enemies." Yet on January 26, 1908, in order to start the Christian Science Monitor, she faced up to the sharp wrench of leaving the familiar, much-loved surroundings of Pleasant View to launch into the unknown, to move, quote, "to another house," unquote. Chestnut Hill. And how accurate was her premonition of being delivered up to her enemies and of her subsequent mental murder can be seen from the photocopy of her signed statement shown on page 27, which tells the whole sad story, namely, "It took a combination of sinners that was fast to harm me." In other words, to bring about my mental murder. The mental murder occurred when Mrs. Eddy could not throw off the shock of her discernment that she was being betrayed by those on whom she had trustingly relied. That Mrs. Eddy was aware of this cruel betrayal can also be inferred from her revealing, plaintive murmur on that memorable last carriage ride with Laura Sargent, quote, "If my students had obeyed me, I might have lived and carried the cause," unquote. It is a well-known fact that although Calvin Fry and Adam Dickey, Mrs. Eddy's secretaries, were intensely loyal to Mrs. Eddy, they were sometimes pressured by the board into acts harmful to Mrs. Eddy, and therefore to the cause of Christian Science. They would, like Judas, have hanged themselves in an act of repentance if they'd been aware of the crown of thorns they pressed on the brow of their leader. It was their materiality that blocked their perception of Mary Baker Eddy's mission to complete the works of Christ Jesus on earth. A perception that could only be gained through an understanding of church as the structure of truth and love, whatever rests upon and proceeds from divine principle. Mrs. Eddy never hesitated to write the board or her publisher regarding even trivial matters. If she had contemplated such a momentous change as having her picture and signature removed, she certainly would herself have written Allison V. Stewart, her publisher, or whoever was concerned. Dickey Memoirs. In fact, Dickey, in his memoirs, a book banned by Boston officialdom, states that Mrs. Eddy was extremely careful concerning any and all changes in her writings. Quote, "Alterations, like anything else that emanated from Mrs. Eddy's pen, were most carefully handled, and great pains were taken to see that it was just as she expressed it," unquote. He states that Mrs. Eddy first made the change in lead pencil in her book. After that, she herself prepared a letter to Mr. Stewart, her publisher, stating what change or changes were to be made. Mr. Dickey states, "This letter was signed by Mrs. Eddy. It was not signed, quote, per Fry or, quote, per Dickey, as are the letters now on file in the archives that are shown to visitors and researchers, purporting to have been dictated by Mrs. Eddy." Letters ordering a change of any kind in her books were signed by Mrs. Eddy herself. This stark revelation that Mrs. Eddy herself always signed letters to the publisher regarding any change made in Science and Health would void the two letters signed per Fry and per Dickey as constituting evidence that Mrs. Eddy authorized the removal of her picture and signature. This would, of course, be one of several reasons why the board was so shocked by the Dickey memoirs, and immediately recalled and destroyed all copies that had been sent to Dickey Association members. In this connection, recall also Mrs. Eddy's answer to the court in the next friend's suit. When asked if she always signed her own letters, she replied, "Yes, if I know about them." To perpetuate itself, the board needed to maintain control of the copyright on Science and Health. Attorneys have agreed that her picture and signature were all the copyright Mrs. Eddy needed to forever guarantee the purity of her text. However, the board was determined to continue the copyright in order to maintain control of the movement, hence the necessity to remove her picture and signature. Mr. Dickey states definitely that under no circumstance would Mr. Stewart have made a change in Mrs. Eddy's books unless the order to do so came directly from Mrs. Eddy. Of course, Mr. Stewart had nothing to do with the Christian Science periodicals. He had nothing to do with the deletion of the words in the Journal and Sentinel advertisements, which stated that Science and Health contained Mrs. Eddy's picture and signature. A point to be remembered here is that while journals and sentinels are prepared weeks before they're mailed out, a slight change, such as removing a line of advertising, can be made quite late in the printing and can be done quite secretly. In her chapter Animal Magnetism Unmasked, Mrs. Eddy exposes this secrecy, stating, "So secret are the present methods of animal magnetism that they ensnare the age into indolence and produce the very apathy on the subject which the criminal desires." Unquote. When one considers how lies and deceit have followed more lies and deceit, every hour weaving webs more complicated and subtle, it takes no stretch of the imagination, considering the prevailing apathy, to see how easily it could be made to appear that Mrs. Eddy herself ordered the changes. The underlings working in the printing department would not be aware that an order to remove part of an advertisement had not come from Mrs. Eddy. See her November 28, 1910 indictment. "It took a combination of sinners that was fast to harm me." After Mrs. Eddy's demise on December 3, 1910, Mr. Stewart would have honored changes ordered by the board, since they had boldly announced themselves as Mrs. Eddy's successors. He would have been unaware of those hidden agents, marginal heading on page 102 of Science and Health, where Mrs. Eddy speaks of the looms of crime hidden in the dark recesses of mortal thought, and warns that the mild forms of animal magnetism are disappearing, and its aggressive features are coming to the front. Again, further exposing the human hatred of truth, Mr. Dickey states that Mrs. Eddy's idea of church government differed greatly from those of mankind in general. He says that she knew that her church, established as it was under divine direction, would incur the hatred and opposition of every known form of religion which has evolved according to the wisdom of man, and that, therefore, in order to progress, her church must follow divine leading instead of being the product of legal enactments and worldly wise government. She therefore placed herself at the head of her church because she knew mortal mind could not be trusted to conduct it. "This is why," says Mr. Dickey, "she did away with first members and later executive members. She knew that to place laws, decrees, edicts, or enactments of holy inspiration and wisdom in the care of groups of people was definitely to incur the likelihood of the divine idea being buried under ecclesiasticism, and so lost." She told Mr. Dickey that if she could find one individual on earth who was sufficiently spiritually equipped, she would immediately place that person at the head of her church government. But there was none. Further, Mr. Dickey states, quote, "Asking me to take a pencil, she slowly dictated the following: I prayed God day and night to show me how to form my church and how to go on with it. I understand that he showed me. Elsewhere she makes it clear that God's answer to this fervent prayer was to place the estoppel clauses in the manual and to terminate the 5-member board of directors and every vestige of centralized control by a so-called mother church when she was no longer here. Just as I understand, he showed me Christian Science, and no human being ever showed me Christian Science. Then I have no right or desire to change what God has directed me to do, and it remains for the church to obey it. Mrs. Eddy saw the great danger to humanity of an ecclesiastical hierarchy taking over when she was no longer here to control by her ability to hear God's direction and her willingness to follow that direction at any cost. Unquote. We know that Mr. Dickey did not follow Mrs. Eddy's grave and sober warning when he was appointed a director. There is ample evidence that he never understood the deep spiritual meaning of Mrs. Eddy's teaching. He seems to have made no connection between what she had so solemnly dictated and his own disobedience to the manual's estoppel clauses. Thus we see how quickly he became a victim of the more aggressive features of animal magnetism. Mrs. Eddy saw the terrible danger, and she placed herself between humanity and the danger. It was this quality that made Mrs. Eddy the leader. Even in the animal kingdom, as we observe it, we can quickly detect the leader. Impending danger is sensed by animals, and the leader of the herd will, without hesitation, move toward that danger. The leader instinctively places himself between the herd and the danger. This protective instinct, this leaning toward danger, is also the mark of a leader of people. It is the final test. Mrs. Eddy, by instinct always, without the slightest hesitation, placed herself between humanity and the danger. When the storms reached gale force, because her ideas of church government differed greatly from those of others, and her ideas of a totally spiritual church incurred the hatred and opposition of not only other religions, but also of adherents in her own church, she resolutely leaned into the storms and stood firm. This was the ultimate mark of her leadership and of her great love for humanity. Returning now to Mrs. Eddy and her copyrights. Affixing her picture and signature to the book with its cross and crown emblem guaranteed that for all time and all ages the Revelator would be identified with the message of the Revelation. Pestalozzi, the great Swiss educational reformer, said, "To put a point across, repeat it 100 times. Accordingly, the following is repeated to make a point of utmost importance. As we know from many sources, and as Adam Dickey stated in his memoirs just quoted, Mrs. Eddy was precise and intensely exact in all matters dealing with changes in science and health. This attention to detail was especially pronounced in legal matters such as copyrights. Indeed, shortly after her marriage to Dr. Eddy in 1877, she and Dr. Eddy journeyed to Washington, D.C., where they made a thorough study of copyright laws. Mrs. Eddy was especially interested in how to protect the many changes she knew she would be making in future editions of Science and Health. She learned that these could be protected by simply registering the changes with the Copyright Office, without each time taking out a new copyright. Consider, for instance, in the 4th edition of 1907, she changed her definition of God. This was the most momentous single change she had ever made in Science and Health. In fact, her definition of God, as perfected in this edition of 1907, is the most weighty and awe-inspiring information ever to come to mankind, as explained elsewhere. Yet she did not register this change or any of the other extremely important changes she made in the editions that followed the 1906 edition. In view of the fact that she had heretofore exercised the utmost care in registering all changes to Science and Health, this deliberate act of not registering these alterations is incontestable proof that she was obeying a God-directed mandate not to copyright her final editions, or even register the changes she had made in the textbook. A science doesn't need copywriting. The result of the board's disobedience has been the failure of the Christian Science movement to grow and prosper, to overcome all manner of discord, sin, disease, and death, as it was intended to do, and is destined to do as the error is exposed and corrected. Today, instead of our churches prospering as Christian Science societies in consonance with the Church Manual Directive and overflowing with truth-seekers, church after church is closing, and Committee on Publication members instruct local church boards how to sell their valuable property and how to turn the proceeds over to the Boston headquarters. Sadly, it is there consumed, not in promoting Mary Baker Eddy's works, but rather in the construction of huge buildings, salaries, etc., and in the enormous legal fees incident to keeping all editions of Science and Health imprisoned via copyright laws, and keeping the Christian Science textbook further and further removed from public access, allowing it to be sold only in the rapidly closing Christian Science reading rooms. Reading rooms which today a few people know about. The desirability of having handled the copyright on Science and Health in the way Mrs. Eddy Shirley left it should be readily apparent to thinking Christian Scientists. For example, if Science and Health had been allowed to enter the public domain at her passing, with only the cross and crown insignia or trademark and her picture and signature to protect the purity of her Christ message to the world. This desirability can be seen if we consider the following. In 1910, Christian Science was sweeping the earth. In 1910, Mrs. Eddy's name and Christian Science were headline fare for millions of newspaper readers the world over. In 1910, even her once bitter enemy, Mark Twain, noting the fast-growing popularity of Christian Science, felt it was, quote, quite within the probabilities that a century hence she will be the most imposing figure that has cast its shadow across the globe since the inauguration of our Christian era. Mark Twain, Christian Science, page 102. There is no doubt this would have materialized if Mrs. Eddy's plan had been carried out. In 1910, considering the fascination with which the public followed Mrs. Eddy and her work, it is conceivable that the world's largest publishing houses would have welcomed the chance to print and promote her Science and Health, running full-page advertisements of it, had not the illegal five-member board in Boston claimed copyright on it. The fatal effects in the wake of these misguided acts can be seen in the rapid decline of the once mighty and swiftly expanding Christian Science movement, as the tremendous momentum built up during Mrs. Eddy's spiritual government subsided. In 1910, if Science and Health had been allowed to go into the public domain, as Mrs. Eddy planned, there is no doubt that it would quickly have become a bestseller. We know that in Mrs. Eddy's day, Science and Health headed the list of books most frequently borrowed from the American public libraries. And Mrs. Eddy herself, during her last years, did not give her messages to the Christian Science periodicals, but beamed them to the world through the world's own communication mediums. The evidence is overwhelming that the Boston hierarchy never comprehended Mrs. Eddy's moves or her spiritually divine reasoning. They never understood that the ultimate of the entire teaching of Christian Science is to restore to man his consciousness of the divine mind as his only mind. They were no doubt sincere in their certainty that Mrs. Eddy was mistaken in terminating the Mother Church and her temporary 5-member board, for to them the upbuilding of matter, of a material organization, was of supreme importance. Too late the Christian Science field has learned the debilitating results of this upbuilding of matter. They have seen it bring the Christian Science movement to its knees. They have seen how this upbuilding of matter has brought Christian Science to the nadir of being considered a mere cult by the press. In 1892, Mrs. Eddy strongly opposed the plan of her students to reorganize. She finally told them that the church's, the material-minded students, weakest point has always been to yield to the influence of man and not God.